Chapter 5. Iron Warriors. Dagger Point. Questions.
All units, cut engines!
Cord shouted the command, as another sonic boom rang through War Anvil's interior. Sasha was swearing, hands pressed over her ears. Cord was watching the Auspex. It must have been a direct orbital drop, straight down from the edge of the void, fast, the kind of thing you only did if you were going straight into a war zone. He could see the aircraft now, small pips of light streaking across his screen as they banked east. Another sonic boom split the air above them, then another, and another.
It's a full flight! Shouted Zaid.
Cord was adjusting the screen, throwing its viewpoint as wide as it would go. Blurred markers streaked the screen. They were out on the edge of the vast plateau which the Talonborn called the Khedive. The enemy formation they were tracking was 40 kilometers in front of them, just at the edge of sensor range. Another thundercrack. Zaid was not wrong. A full flight of warplanes had just dropped directly above their position. That might mean they were seconds away from being wreckage. The only thing holding him back from that conclusion was that they were still alive.
"How did they find us?"
shouted Sasha. Cord ignored her. He took a quick breath, felt his pulse steady, and flicked over to the regiment-wide vox.
"Squadron leads, this is War Anvil. What are you seeing?"
6 aircraft so far. They are coming back around, banking towards the east."
The voice was loud but level. Zekanilla. Cord knew without looking that she had shut down her squadron on a coin as soon as he gave the order.
"They are!"
Abbas, from the 1st Squadron lead tank, his breath ragged. Shock? Possibly. More likely anger. That was normally the way with him.
"No signals," said Arrigo. "They are spitting out a hell of a lot of Auspex distortion. If they hadn't come down on top of us, we wouldn't have known they were here. Probably not ours, but probably not looking for us either."
"Well, it doesn't mean that they might not take the chance to come back around and pick us off," snarled Abbas.
"This far away from anything else, maybe they're just wondering what we are doing," said Zekanilla. "Oh, if we stay, maybe they will think we're already dead in the dust," added Arrigo.
Cord took another breath.
"Hold position," he said. "If we find we're still alive in a few minutes, we can worry about other things."
He listened, straining to hear the aircraft over the vox hiss. Was that rumble them, or just the wind on the silent hull? The screen showed him a series of distorted marks that might mean that the aircraft was still banking, or had already cut a course to the east. The seconds stretched on. The roar of rockets and the crack of las cannons did not come.
"That does not mean they won't," thought Cord. "This is a battle of hunters and prey. Assume you have escaped and you make your death certain."
"Sir,"
Arrigo's voice cut into his thoughts,
"I have a read on the quarry. They're still moving. Much longer sitting here and we'll lose them."
He switched the view on the Auspex. The estimated position of the patrol they were tracking was drifting into blurred uncertainty.
"Sir,"
Abbas said. Cord could almost hear the Talonborn lieutenant purse his lips as he chose his words.
"Colonel, with all respect, what are we doing out here?"
"Searching for answers," said Cord.
"Sir,"
still Abbas, still holding his emotion on a lengthening leash.
"It's just a sweep patrol. Might not even be Legion machines."
"I saw a silhouette as the mist thinned 5 kilometers back," said Arrigo. "It looked like a predator."
"Even if it is," pressed Abbas, "they're just looking for targets to take out. Targets like us. If we go much further, the smaller machines aren't going to have enough fuel to get back to the shelter."
"They aren't on this planet to fight,"
snapped Cord, and regretted it as soon as he had said it. Silence.
"Sir?"
It was Zekanilla, her oh-so-steady voice touched with concern. Cord shook his head. All of his officers and most of those that rode under his command knew what he believed. They never asked him, and he never talked about it. It was an unspoken understanding that had never been tested. Except now they were on the edge of their fuel radius, watching a quarry, which only he believed was important, disappear into the distance. He shook his head, closed his eyes and began to speak, suddenly unable to hide his weariness.
They thought they had won as soon as they let the first bomb fall. So why come down here after that? Why not just move on?
He opened his eyes, wishing that he could take the suit off and rub them.
You've seen it as well. Legion patrols far from their bases in areas that have no strategic value. They're not looking for targets. They're covering ground, or keeping it clear for others that follow them. This is one of those patrols, way out, heading towards nothing important. If we want to know what they are here for, we follow them.
Well, that's full of it,
Abbas spat. An uneasy silence fell, like the pause between seeing the flash of a bomb and being hit by the blast wave. But when Abbas spoke again, his voice was filled with exhaustion rather than anger.
There needs to be no reason for this war. We are here because we are. We lost at the Sapphire City because we were outgunned and outfought. There is no other reason. No hidden truth that makes sense of it. It just is.
I will let you have that, Lieutenant, said Cord, and his voice was stone. This one time.
Command authorize this, sir,
asked Abbas. Cord said nothing. There was no point. They all knew the answer.
Origo, you got anything to say to this?
Asked Cord. They all respected the scout. He had volunteered, one of the first. He had been there with the rest of them at the fall of the Sapphire City. Cold as a knife blade, that was what most of those who met him said.
There is always another side to things, said Origo at last. Always. Aircraft have passed, sir,
said Zekanilla. Cord shook his head slowly, glanced at Zayd and Sasha. They were looking away, leaning on the gun. They looked as though they were trying to catch a few moments of sleep. They were not, of course. His crew would have heard the exchange, but he knew that they would not say anything. He had got each of them out of the ruin of the Sapphire City, and they would follow him without a word. But Abbas had a point. This was the last moment they could turn back. And if they were going to step into what waited beyond, they had to do it willingly. All of them.
All units, this is War Anvil. You know why we are out here. We are chasing ghosts that no one else believes in. Some of you might not believe in them either, but you know me. Whether you believe me or not, you all have a choice to make now. Turn around and head back to the shelter, or follow me. We move in 20 seconds. War Anvil out.
He shut the vox off.
Maury, warm the engines up. Everyone else, you heard that. I'm afraid you don't get the choice.
Don't really need one, sir,
said Sasha. War Anvil woke to life. Cord waited, counting the seconds off in his head. When he reached 20, he keyed the vox again.
All units, start up the engines. Let's get moving.
Gradually, one after another, the machines of the Talon 71st began to roll across the earth and into the mist. One machine, an executioner, peeled away from the others as they fell into formation around War Anvil. The lone machine turned south. After a few minutes, it was lost from the screens and sights of its comrades.
So,
Cord heard Abbas's voice over the vox and could not help smile.
Igra decided this was not for him. Shame. Where are we going, Colonel?
Into the unknown, replied Cord.
Herend paused on the edge of the tunnel threshold. The wind wound yellow vapour over the land before him. He had not slept again since the Primarch had come to him, and he would not sleep again until he returned. If you return, Ishta thought at the back of his awareness. His dreadnought brothers stood to either side of him. Blunt slabs covered Oren's mortise frame, the barrels of his doubled las cannons catching the passing streams of fog like fingers held in running water. On his other side, Gortan was turning his head unit slowly from side to side, spinning the drill claws of his fists up, and then letting them spin to stillness over and over again. The tanks of the Celeros assault group were forming up behind them, tracks still on crusted earth. At their centre sat a Spartan carrier and a bloated mobile drill machine. Of all the machines in the group, these two had to survive if the mission was to succeed. Everything and everyone else was expendable.
Master,
Yarvak's voice spoke the word to him. He did not reply. He knew what his lieutenant was going to ask.
What do we wait for?
Nothing.
The tunnel mouth they stood in opened in the side of a mountain range. A shallow slope slid down to meet low hills in front of him. Beyond that, the land undulated away into the fog like the waves of a frozen sea. Above the tunnel mouth, the bare rock of the mountain reached up to the hidden sky. The tunnel itself had been the entrance to an abandoned mine network. The Iron Warriors' sappers and stonewrights had connected it to their growing network of the sightless warren within a few days of the first shelter falling to them. Now it had provided Herend and his force a door into a silent corner of the surface. What are we that we have made this? The thought pulled at Herend. He adjusted his view, zooming in on where a line of pylons marched across the crest of a hill and into the murk.
Do you think of the past, Yarvak?
No, Master, Yarvak's voice cut into comm static. I think of the task I must perform. I think of my duty.
Duty?
The duty we have to the Primarch.
What is that duty?
To never fail. To never prove weak. To never break.
Yarvak's answer came without hesitation, but Herend caught the note of puzzlement at the edge of the words.
Why?
Master?
Answer.
We are Iron Warriors.
We are Iron Warriors.
That found an echo in his own thoughts.
We are the Olympian born, the legion that did what others would not deign to do, the breakers and makers of war. We are the wronged. The slighted, the forgotten strength of an Imperium that turned its face from us, even as we gave it the iron of our blood.
What does it mean to be an Iron Warrior?
To be iron with...
Now! What does it mean now?
A pause filled with the sound of the wind blowing the death shroud of a planet.
What it always meant, said Yarvak at last.
Herend said nothing, and then spoke across the vox to his entire group.
Forward!
He stepped out of the tunnel mouth and into the waiting desolation. The sickle blade hit the edge of Talan's atmosphere and threw a cloak of fire across its wings. It trembled and sang as it plunged down through the air. Black ceramite shutters blinked closed over the gunship's canopy, and suddenly the view of the rancid planet was gone from Argonus's view. A projection of the world beyond filled his eyes instead, the complexity of reality stripped down to lines of light and sensor data. He was flying by hand, feeling the craft twist against bands of thickening air. Behind the gunship, the Iron Warriors' void fighters peeled away to circle the re-entry point. The remaining six craft swung in closer to form a box, four lightning crows and two fire raptors. Argonis heard the terse words of each pilot flick across the vox. They were good. Each movement and formation change crisp and precise, but Argonis could not shake the idea that the Iron Warriors flew with the same blunt efficiency as a resentful serf who wanted a duty done as quickly as possible. That was not fair, of course. The Iron Warriors were formidable in every sense. They just lacked something under their skin of iron.
You trust believe the operative, Yelen?
Sota Nul spoke across the vox. They had not spoken in the hour since the sickle blade had launched, but she spoke as though continuing a conversation that had continued without pause. Perhaps in the Tech Witch's mind she had simply cut back into the discussion of Yelen's lack of information, as though resuming a recording from a mark.
Them, not he, said Argonis.
When you talk of the 20th Legion, you should never think that you see them all. If you see 10, then there are 100 you do not see. If you see 100, assume that there are 1,000. If you see one alone, assume there are 10,000.
Is that your own wisdom?
The War Master's.
He does not trust them,
said Sota Nul, and he thought he heard something rattling and serpentine in her voice.
Despite their alliance to his cause?
His remarks, he said carefully, were, I believe, intended as a compliment of their mode of war. Argonis watched as the altimeter counted down. They were within the lower bands of atmosphere. He blinked a rune, and the shutters flicked back from the canopy. A swirled soup of fog pressed against the armor glass. They were above a huge plateau that bore the name Khediv, diving directly downwards, accelerating into the grasp of the planet's gravity. Just above the ground, they would flick up from their descent, then slam into a ground-hugging curve. The 16th Legion called this maneuver Ahagres, the dagger point in Chthonian. The Iron Warriors had simply referred to it as Assault Maneuver 23B. The ground was coming up fast. He triggered the gunship's ground-sweeping auspex. The shapes of war machines blinked in his sight, bright with heat and hard metal edges.
You have not answered, said Sota Nul.
No, he replied. I neither trust nor believe the Alpha Legion. And what the War Master believes is not for me to know.
But you are his emissary.
Yes, I am.
War machines active in insertion zone.
The heavy voice of the Iron Warriors escort commander cut into the vox.
Threat status unclear.
Well, leave them, snapped Argonis. Even if they are hostile, they won't be able to touch us. Maintain pattern and course.
Confirmed, said the Iron Warrior.
Argonis watched as the altitude count drained down into smaller and smaller values.
Yet.
Sota Nul's voice lingered on the word. There was something unsettling about it, something more flesh than machine, but still not human.
Yet, even though you neither believe nor trust the operative Yalen, we still follow where he guides us?
You do not need to trust a weapon to wield it.
And that is what you do? You are sure?
The altitude value at the edge of his sight pulsed amber, then red. Beyond the canopy, the fog parted for a brief instant, and a bare plain expanded beneath him. For an eye blink, he saw the scattered shapes of tanks. Then he triggered the anti-grav and the gunship snapped up. G-forces hit him like a blow. For a wonderful, terrible second, it felt as though he were both floating and falling without control. Then he slammed power into the thrusters, and Sickleblade punched forward, and the thunder of its passing vanished behind it. She waited in the dark and talked to herself. It was cold. Her enhanced physiology let her discard the discomfort of the dropping temperature, but she still registered it. She had left the Enviro suit on. One of the suit's very limited advantages was that it kept the chill out. She had cut all power in Vanquisher 681 before she had killed its crew. That part of the plan had been simple. The machine's controls were not complex. She had waited until the rest of the squadron had spread out, and then let one of her netflies crawl out of her suit and bite into the tank's vox and comms systems. From there it had been easy to slowly guide the squadron to where she needed it. Over the course of an hour she had teased Vanquisher 681 further and further away from its comrades without anyone realizing. By the time she cut the power in the tank, there was a very small probability that the rest of the squadron would find it. The crew had not panicked at first, and when they had, it had played to her advantage. Then the waiting had begun. She had begun the self-dialogue after 4 hours.
Question. What is the chance of error in the termination projection? Answer. High. The factors are unknown, and all outcomes are approximations.
It was a basic technique of the Vanus Temple, one of the first that initiates mastered. As much as mental skill and data were the foundations of the Vanus arts, Doubt and questioning were trained into their psyches from childhood. The first stage of this training came from responding to the questions of a master, and then by mimicking that technique through assuming the viewpoint stroke intellectual framework of another person. Eventually, the question stroke aggressive doubt technique became part of their basic awareness. In time, the back and forth of self-interrogation sank down into the architecture of their subconscious. Most Vanus rarely revisited the technique consciously, but Io had taken to doing so during her deployment. At first, she had thought of it as a form of mental cleaning, keeping her functions grounded. After a while, she wondered if it had become a consequence of operating without direction, a compulsion. In the quiet of the Vanquisher's hull, she flipped between questioner and answer, vocalizing both. In her mind, the questioner was always Master Senus, her mentor for her first decade in the temple. His sour, shrunken face grinned out each challenge from a picked-perfect memory.
Question. What is the basis of the current termination projection?
Answer. That the presence of an emissary is seen as significant by the Alpha Legion. That the presence of the emissary represents a change in the problem field. Where there is change, there is opportunity.
Question. State your current target.
Answer. Apex Alpha Legion operatives within the Talon War locale.
Question. Name and identify individual targets.
Answer. Alpha Legion Apex operative Cognomen Yalen.
Question. Outline targets' current location, nature, capabilities, connections, and resources.
Answer. Demanded information unknown.
She paused. In her mind, the memory image of her mentor's face grinned. It was not a pleasant expression.
Question. Outline base-level information related to target.
Answer. Multi-level infiltration of loyalist forces on Talan by human or human-approximate operatives. Sub-level of bribed, coerced, or converted assets likely to exist within survivors of Iron Warrior's viral attack because of prior infiltration of Talan by the Alpha Legion.
Question. Project the likely meaning of emissary in the context of the problem field.
Answer. An actor sent by an external power as formal representation of that power. As the Alpha Legion is not dominant within the enemy forces, the emissary is not to them. The Iron Warriors are the dominant authority within the enemy forces at present. The emissary is, therefore, an individual sent to the Iron Warriors from another power base. This analysis has a 76% accuracy value.
Demand. Expand beyond primary analysis.
Answer. Given a blank reading of power values within the enemy forces, an emissary implies at least a peer relationship of authority and suggests a dominant relationship. The emissary is from a higher authority than the Iron Warriors. The emissary is from Horus Lupercal. This expanded analysis has a 38% accuracy value.
In her mind's eye, her mentor's desiccated mouth spread into a dagger-slash smile.
Question. How does this offer a termination solution on the designated target?
She paused again.
Answer. The presence of an emissary from Horus represents a change in power structures, an overall alteration in the problem field.
The memory of her mentor just stared at her, eyes glittering in mocking triumph.
Answer clarification, she began.
Paused, felt her own hesitation and shivered. To doubt brings truth, said another voice in her head. To be unclear is to fail before you begin.
Answer clarification. The emissary allows for an expansion of the problem space and possible elimination of targets by manipulating ignorance and knowledge within the enemy forces.
She stopped. She could hear her own heart beating through her blood in the silence of the Vanquisher's interior. She saw the memory of her mentor lean forward, looking down at her, the light catching the implanted membrane over his eyes, turning them to blank silver.
"Assertion," he whispered with her voice. "You are clutching at uncertainties.
Response. There are possible..."
The words caught in her throat.
"Assertion. You don't see a clear outcome path. Assertion. You don't know what you are doing. Assertion. You are going to make an error."
She blinked, suddenly aware of the cold inside the Vanquisher again.
"You are going to make an error, Io,"
she said quietly to herself. She stayed still and quiet for a long while after that, eyes staring into space while she counted seconds. At last, the probability that the squadron were still searching for Vanquisher 681 shrank to nothing. It was time. She uncurled herself and reached across the slumped body of the tank's commander. The tank's communication and vox systems came online. She triggered the signal she had prepared. It was a broad-spectrum distress broadcast. Dozens of these signals washed the comms network of Talarn, the dying gasps of war machines who could not reach home. Both sides tracked down the sources of such signals near to their shelters. Functioning war machines were valuable in this war, even if the dead were pulled out of their hulls. The signal began to ping out into dead air, and Io listened and waited for the Iron Warriors to hear. She had positioned Vanquisher 681 close to the patrol screens which ran around the sightless Warren's southernmost entrances. Somewhere in the Iron Warrior's base the signal would be heard, and recovery vehicles would come to pull the dead hull beneath the earth. Once she was inside the sightless Warren, she could begin the next stage. She curled back into a ball and watched the signal transmission light pulse. She considered beginning the self-dialogue again, but decided not to. The sound of a rising wind rattled down the outside of the hull. After a moment, she thought it became a voice scratching at her from memory.
"You are going to make an error, Io," it said.